So last class we finished covering chapter 1. We ended off discussing our hearing and doing God's word, being hearing what we should do and then acting on that, and some discussion on what was pure and undefiled religion from page 9. And unless anyone has comments and some thoughts they had between last class and now, we'll go ahead and move to chapter 2, discussing a topic of partiality. I asked you to look at the passages of verses 1 through 13, where we're looking at the discussion of partiality, and identify the number of times you see words or phrases, thoughts relating to that. What some of those were.
Verse 1 was favoritism.
Verse 1.
First, special attention.
That's right. Thank you.
Verse 4, distinctions. Made distinctions.
Yes. Verse 4 is made distinctions. And of course, we're going to get some slight differences in translations.
I also
yes.
Judges in verse 4. I don't know if that, if that fit that, but they're making some kind of distinction, or making a judgment, based on the distinction that you're making.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we might get into that later. I wasn't going to count that, because I think partiality is, we'll get into it later, but yeah. don't want to jump in there too soon. Any others?
9 shows partiality.
Yes, and verse 9 shows partiality. The distinction, partiality, favoritism, paying attention to one over another, all connote the thought of partiality. See these 4 times through these passages. And then we're going to ask you to identify in these passages, James is writing to them. Evidently, he sees some of this occurring. On what basis were these people making a distinction? How are they showing this partiality? If you look at read verses 1, 2, and 3. My brethren, do not hold the faith of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Lord, with partiality. For if there should come into your assembly a man with gold, rings, and fine apparel, and there should also come in a poor man in filthy clothes, and you pay attention to the one wearing the fine clothes, and say to him, you, sit here in a good place. And you say to the poor man, you stand there, or you sit here at my footstool. And also in verse 6, I'll go ahead and read it, verse 6. It says, have you not shown amongst yourselves and become judges with evil thoughts? Listen, my beloved brethren, has God not chosen the poor of this world to be rich in faith and heirs of the kingdom which he promised to those who love him? And in 6, that you have dishonored the poor man. Do not the rich oppress you and drag you into the courts. So how are they showing partiality? How are they making distinctions here?
Between the rich and the poor.
Yep, they're between the rich and the poor.
Outward appearance.
Yes, thank you. An outward appearance. And that's how they were on their outward appearance. That's how they were judging who was rich, who was poor. they were looking at the fine clothes versus the filthy clothes, the gold rings. And then they were placing more value on this. And this is all, superficial value as man sees it, right? Of course, we look at James 2:5, just as pointed out, as we just read, we see God has chosen the poor of this world and rich in faith as heirs of the kingdom, which he promised to those who love him. And also look back at Romans 2:10-11, which I think we read across that one when we were studying Galatians. Of course, this is how man judges superficially. Looking at how God judges, of course, this is dealing with a different matter, not outward appearance, but Jews versus Gentiles. sort of the race. And verse 10:11, but glory, honor, and peace to everyone who works what is good, to the Jew first and also to the Gentile. And verse 11, for there is no partiality with God. And of course, as we were studying in Galatians, this was to do with who was saved, how men are saved, and God doesn't show partiality between Jews, between Gentiles, how you were born, but based on faith. Also in 1 Samuel 16. Now I'm sure there's more passages throughout the Bible that show man's superficial judgments versus God's. But this one came to my mind first. When we look at David, when Samuel was sent to go to David's house, to the house of Jesse, and look for someone to appoint, appoint and anoint. He's looking at the verse 6. He goes to Jesse's house. So it was, when they came, he looked at Eliab and said, Samuel says, surely the Lord's anointed is before him. But the Lord said to Samuel, do not look at his appearance or at his physical stature, because I have refused him. For the Lord does not see as man sees. For man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. And we have to remember that later, because I know when we'll discuss it, you know, I'm trying to jump ahead of myself. Mm-hmm. Slow down. We'll get there. So remember that passage. And so, yeah, they're making this distinction purely on superficial, who they're determining who is rich and who is poor, and in showing that preference. And has that gone away?
No.
We don't see that anymore here?
Oh, yeah.
Or not here, but in
we
the
do,
world.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that still occurs even today amongst men of the world, and can, you know, Christians can be in danger of it as well. And so it's a good point for us to remember. And so they're making this distinction. What, in what ways was this being manifested? What did this lead them to do? In verse 3 and 6, we've already read. Read again. So they made this judgment, this partiality. Boom. You. Now, how did that show forth?
Mistreating their fellow brethren.
Yes, mistreating their fellow brethren. And in what manners?
Verse 3 says you pay special attention to the one.
Yes.
And not showing honor to the lowest.
That's correct. In verse 6 it says they dishonor the poor. In verse 3 they show special attention to the one. And how is that special attention demonstrated?
Given the good seats.
Okay, they were given the good seats. front row. By the way, in our assembly, I don't know if front row would be the good seat, because they stay empty. Back row is the one to have.
It would be show honor, please, you know. Just like the disciples were fighting which one was going to sit beside Jesus, you know, there must have been places of honor, you know, or whatever in that society. So, you know, they just, it's honor.
Yeah. I mean, at weddings, they have the bridal party, and the bridal, they get their own reserved table, the whole bridal party, and it's, of course, you know, it's for the bride and groom, but also for those that they've established as be part of the party, those close to them, and they have the special seats. And, you know, depending on how people work, if they're usually up front, out in the center, where everyone can see them. But I like Linda's comment. We discussed earlier who this book was written to. We read about the 12 tribes. We don't know if that was, you know, specifically spiritual, or if it's dealing with these are truly Jews before Gentiles have been saved. We do know that was a problem amongst the Jews. Yeah, we look at Mark 10, as Linda pointed out, the apostles fighting for the good seats. You see in Mark 10, verse 37. Actually, beginning of verse 35. James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came to Jesus saying, Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask. And he said to them, well, what do you want me to do? They said, grant us that we may sit one on your right hand and the other on your left in your glory. And they're thinking about jockeying positions of honor. You know, this is something that's prevalent among the Jews at that time. We also see this in Matthew 23. Matthew 23, verse 6. Here, Jesus is warning disciples against the scribes and the Pharisees. You know, he tells them, you know, verse 3, he says, do what they say. They're in the seats of power. They have authority. They're teaching. Do what they say, but don't do what they do. Because, amongst other things, in verse 6, they love the best places at the feasts and the best seats in the synagogues. And he goes on to tell them how they love to be called rabbi. They love to be called teacher or father. They want preeminence. You know, they want these positions of, look at me. They do things to be seen. That's in there somewhere too. I forgot which verse. You know, but these men, these scribes and Pharisees at that time, are doing things to be seen, to be honored. Look at me. And, you know, he's warning them against that. That certainly can, that follow along with those men who are, you know, those who become saved. And it's not exclusive to them either as Jews, is it? I mean, is that, again, that's something that occurs today, is it not? That people like power and honor. They like to be seen, they like to be on TV, even if it's doing some stupidest thing in the world. They get on there and they do it, and look at me, I'm on YouTube, and I got a million hits. Even though it shows their foolishness, they still get some satisfaction from that. So they're showing preference to some versus the others. They're giving them preferential treatment. They're treating them with more respect, valuing them more. And so I ask, is it sinful to show this type of partiality? And if so, why is it? Looking at a list of some scriptures in James 2 and verse 4, we've already read, it says, have you not shown partiality amongst yourselves, or differentiation, and become judges with evil thoughts? And then in verse 8 and 9, if you really fulfill the royal law according to the scripture, you shall love your neighbor as yourself, you do well. But if you show partiality, you commit sin and are convicted by the law as transgressors. Also look at 1 Timothy 5, verse 21, if someone wants to read that one for us.
I solemnly charge you in the presence of God and Jesus Christ, and his chosen angels, to maintain these principles without bias. Do nothing in the spirit of partiality.
Thank you. It's kind of a long, I've looked at the wrong chapter. Yeah, so we see again, do everything without prejudice, do nothing with partiality. Also back to in Leviticus 19. Could read verses 14 through 18 in Leviticus.
You shall not curse a deaf man, nor place a stumbling block before the blind, but you shall revere your God. I am the Lord. You shall do no injustice in judgment. You shall not be partial to the poor, nor defer to the great, but you are to judge your neighbor fairly. You shall not go about as a slanderer among your people, and you are not to act against the life of your neighbor. I am the Lord. You shall not hate your fellow countrymen in your heart. You may surely reprove your neighbor, but you shall not incur sin because of him. You shall not take vengeance, nor bear any grudge against the sons of your people, but you shall love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord. You are to keep...
Thank you. Yeah, the next one goes into livestock.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
We don't
care about livestock.
And also, I want to look at quickly at Deuteronomy, verse 1 and 17. It's close by. Deuteronomy 1 and 17. You shall not show partiality in judgment. You shall hear the small as well as the great. You shall not be afraid in any man's presence, for the judgment is God's. In case it is too hard for you, bring it to me and I will hear it. Of course, we know God expects justice in this particular verse, and as well as some of the other one. God's dealing with, you know, those in power, those dealing out justice, not to show partiality, but show true justice. And also Proverbs 24. Proverbs 24, then verses 23 and 24.
These also are the sayings of the wise. To show partiality in judgment is not good. He who says to the wicked, "You are righteous," people will curse him, nations will abhor him.
Okay. Of course, this is another case of a matter of judgment, dealing cases, but yeah, showing partiality is, this guy's unjust. And they say, no, you're good. For whatever reason, doesn't say the reason. You know, that person the people will curse. So is it sinful to show partiality, looking at these verses?
Yeah.
Yes. Some of these verses. Yes. And
verse 9, if you show partiality, you are committing sin, and you are convicted by the law as transgressors. And then it even starts comparing it to being, if you're guilty of partiality, it's like being guilty of murder or guilty of adultery, because you transgress the law.
Yeah, that's correct. Following that in verse 9, it says, whoever should keep the whole law, and we read this when we were studying Galatians, whoever keep the whole law and stumble in one point, he's guilty of all. For he who said, do not commit adultery, also said, do not murder. Now, if you do not commit adultery, but you do murder, you have become a transgressor of the law. And he's saying here, here's one point. Again, you know, one point, one law. If you don't follow it, which is to love your neighbor, it's as if violating any other point of the law. You have to eat the whole thing. And why was it that that is a sin to show partiality? What is that based on? Yes, love our neighbor, right? To treat one another equally. To, it's man's equal treatment of our fellow man. It's part of the law, and if you don't follow that one bit, even though you do the rest, you're still condemned. We've also seen, we haven't looked that far yet, but this is just one point in their general treatment of the poor. As we've seen, that they're showing preference, but in verses 15 and 16, this attitude is further displayed, their regard for the poor. And if a brother or sister is naked and destitute of daily food, and one of you says to them, depart in peace and be warmed, be filled, but you do not give them the things that are needed for the body, what does it profit? And evidently, if he's writing about it, it's something that someone's done. Here's someone poor, and whatever, make your own way. And then also in chapter 5, which we'll get to in time, verses 1 through 6, come now, you rich, weep and howl for your miseries that are coming upon you. Your riches are corrupted, and your garments are moth-eaten. Your gold and silver are corroded, and their corrosion will be a witness against you, and will eat your flesh like fire. You have heaped up treasure in the last days, and indeed the wages of the laborers who mowed your fields, which you kept back by fraud, cry out. And the cries of the reapers have reached the ears of the Lord of the Sabbath. And so, it's a different situation here. Someone's acting fraudulently, but still you see this, someone who's rich mistreating those who are poor. In both cases, must be a prevalence of that within this congregation. But that general attitude permeates everything. That's how they treat each other daily. Then any other time they're going to be showing that partiality. Anyone else have any other comments? I feel like I'm doing a lot of talking this morning.
I don't think this is talking about having special friends even within the congregation. This is showing partiality so as to not count worthy or to not honor, you know, as it should be, not to have special attachments, you know, with others. Jesus had special attachments with John or Peter and James and, you know, that kind of thing. So it's not saying that we can't have special friends, you know, the other. It's just that we don't value their soul anymore or treat them in the areas that you just covered more than you would a brother, another brother.
Yes. It's everyone can have a friend you get along with better than somebody else. Maybe you spend a little more time with that person. Here, women, I agree with what you're saying. And so we have to differentiate the partiality that's shown. Why is this partiality bad versus another form, as you mentioned, a friend, another form of partiality? And I think you sort of did answer that, that how you value them, that these people, they weren't valuing them much at all, correct? Even though they were brethren or people coming to the assembly.
Or you could be so busy with your special friends that you don't have time or, you don't take care of maybe some of the situations that whether it's family or our special friends, to look about the needs.
And I think it also would be important to call out here the reason, back to the reason why this partiality was shown. It was based on this economic status, correct? Or this superficial appearance. And as we mentioned, and that's what I was going to get back to. Finally got there. Back to Romans, where God doesn't judge by superficial appearance, but by the heart, right? There's this idea of merit or without merit. To judge and have partiality without any merit, based on social status, based on, riches, or that guy looks nicer, or whatever it is. I don't like people with glasses. I'm just saying that. there's no merit in that, is there? Behind the person. Is it wrong to... We say that's wrong, how you treat that person, but in other passages, even in Galatians, we've seen to do good, especially to those of the brotherhood. And so there is encouraging a partiality to brethren, those of the assembly, versus those of the world. And isn't that something we do? We prefer to be with brethren because of the like-mindedness and service to God versus those who prefer sin, prefer transgression, right? And is there merit behind that? Is that just or unjust judgment?
No.
No. Thank you. But I completely agree with you, right? We're all together in this. And that goes back to what Linda was saying, that the partiality that in verse 4, the judge. Judgment doesn't necessarily mean partiality, but partiality is shown when a judgment is made without justice, wouldn't it? When there isn't merit in the judgment that was made. There's no reasoning behind it. No logical reasoning.
Yeah, I think that it doesn't have to... I don't think it has to come to a judgment. I think that in verse 1 where it says, with an attitude of personal favoritism. So I think it starts with an attitude. And even how you carry yourself, you show, you put off a certain air, whether it's good or bad, with people. And I think it's just your overall attitude where it starts.
Yeah. it certainly starts with the attitude and then turns to your treatment of them. And this is certainly something we can apply today. And, you know, I think we're, like I said, we're showing, like, sort of showing, oh, partiality is wrong, and it's sinful in this case. In this case, well, it's not so wrong. And so there's always a line somewhere where you can cross over based on how your actions, how you're showing that. I mean, you know, you can like some people because you can get along with them just a little better than maybe someone else. But, you know, you should still treat everyone well, right? And I think we're all together in this. Mm-hmm. We got it. Don't do the quiet.
I think it goes a lot deeper than maybe we give this kind of surface attention. And I think it's we're a lot more prone to this problem than we may think. A couple of questions come to mind. Last time somebody visited the congregation here that you've never met before, they don't look like you, they don't dress like you, did you go talk to them, or did you spend your time after services spending your time, this goes back to comment, with family, those that you're comfortable with? This says, shame on you. Get over there and talk to them. They're our guests. They're here for a reason. Maybe they've never had the gospel before. Then again, maybe they're just passing through. You don't know if you don't ask. I know you. I don't have to interact with you week to week, service to service, because I know you. I don't know them. What about people throughout the world? They don't live in your country. What's your attitude about them? Yep. Automatically, we stereotype, well, if you're from this part of the world, or even this part of the country, you know, you're from California. There's probably some good that came out of California. I'm not sure. But seriously, I mean, there are Christians in California, and yet we tend to dismiss areas like that because it's so radical. This, I don't want to overstate this, but I don't want to understate it either. I think this is the problem. We're not going to be the adulterer. We're not going to be the drunkard. But we may have a problem with this.
Yeah.
This may be the issue, 2 Corinthians 10:5, when we're standing at the judgment. This matter. It
certainly can slip into our actions, and it's certainly applicable for us to be aware of it and on watch for it.
And it may not, it, like Jeff said, it may not be, ever be an action. It may be all up here in your head.
An attitude, yeah.
And you'll never know it. I'm not going to mock God, but I can fool you. Yeah. I can fool, you know, I fool even my wife about things, but that's
correct. I mean, and it comes back to what is, how is that judgment, how are you coming to that establishment of this versus this? How are you making that distinction, and is it a just distinction? I mean, yeah, when you almost always when you come to generalizations of, you know, like China, there's a lot of unbelievers in China. You come out of China, oh, well, certainly that guy doesn't believe in God. But there are some believers in China. I mean, of a population of more than a billion, there may not be many. The generalization is generally true, but it's not absolutely true. I mean, that, like Rob pointed out, that applies to lots of things in our country and lots of different, you know, thoughts we have about things. Oh, sorry, Lisa.
Well, I know it says, you know, it talks about if a man comes into your assembly, but, I mean, do you think it's not just when you are worshiping together and someone might come in, you know, I mean, this, I think this should apply to our whole lives. I mean, that's how we live. The other day, he was talking about this man that was buying a tire, you know, and even he said, you know, his clothes were just all raggedy, and he was just, you know, and his car was declined, and he said he felt bad because, you know, in his mind, the first thing he thought was, yeah, this guy's trying to, you know, pull something over, but, you know, he waited, and the man, he had to go get cash out of the ATM, came back and paid it, you know, when it's just the society you live in, the first thing that comes to your mind is, you know, look at the way that they're dressed. And I don't think that it's just when we come here, services, it's just all the time. You know,
I agree with you. It's how we treat one another, yeah, not just when we're here in service, but throughout the rest of our lives. And yeah, that, and it's, you know, it does stem, like, it does deal with judging because it's what they call prejudice, right? Where you're prejudging, you're making a judgment without knowledge, without just observation. You know, an appearance, yeah, everyone does a snap judgment on appearance before knowing a person. And yeah, it can lead you, can lead you wrong and lead you to show partiality between, for whatever reason, you know. Josh?
So when we make our individual decisions about, like, the temporal things that are going to take place on Earth, like what we're going to wear, what kind of job we're going to work, and whatever training we're going to get into, just kind of things that don't affect the way that you will attain salvation, but there's still time and decisions you have to make on Earth that, you know, get you through life. Will we make those decisions by weighing, you know, our own preferences and our partiality towards these, towards making a certain decision? And we become partial towards that decision. And if we look at someone's life who didn't choose that route, it's easy for us to say, you know, we don't agree with your decision making, we look different on you. But we need to recognize that when we're making those decisions, these are not like, these are not what we're supposed to place a lot of importance and value on. They're just, you know, decisions like you choose to do a job that takes a lot of training, or you just say, I'm out of high school and I want to go and I want to go start working. Someone may look at that, or the one who chose to go start working right out of high school, and say, that's a foolish decision. And another one could say, you know, you did a lot of training, not a good idea. But that shouldn't even like come into our mind when we're trying to weigh a person's importance to us and the importance of their soul.
Yeah.
Just trying to say, like, when someone's making decisions about how they dress or what they're doing with their time on Earth, unrelated to, you know, direct worship, we can't be judgmental of that because it's just how they're spending their time. So a man comes to the church, comes to worship, and he didn't choose to put on a lot of nice clothes. This passage is one of the few in the New Testament that's talking about we're not supposed to be partial to that. God's not partial to that either.
Yeah, God values us all equally, right? We're supposed to value everyone's soul and judge correctly according to merit, as I was discussing earlier, right? I mean, because someone, you know, we have to judge properly. Now, someone who shows no respect for God, or you try to teach them the word, and they reject it, you know, there's only so much you can do for that person. You have to move on. But, you know, you shouldn't go, oh, well, that guy looks kind of ratty. I won't even bother with him, you know. I've been in situations where I don't look my best either. I think when you were talking about it, and also a little bit when you're talking, it reminded me when I was, they make us wear bright orange coveralls when we go in the field. And I came out of the field in Alabama working one day, and I was all dirty, and I'm in this bright orange coverall, and I go to Subway late, last place that's open, and they're about to close, and they're looking very wary at a guy in an orange jumpsuit. and everyone in our office is begging them to change that, because we're like, guys, we look like convicts. But the safety man's like, but you're highly visible, and that's important. So yeah, it's not, and it probably, yeah, the last person that's going to rob this Subway is going to be me. But they don't know that, and basically I was looking, they were a little cautious, and they actually mentioned something. I was like, no.
from the other side of it, too, I think Christ accused the priests of being whitewashed walls. So if we're looking at someone who does have the things that we like to see, and we start assuming that they're better for it, we may be so much more wrong than if we, you know, thought nothing of it.
Yeah.
So
only God can judge the heart.
There's a lot of danger in looking at someone's appearance and trying to make a guess at what their soul's condition is.
That's right. Just,
you can't do that.
Yeah.
I think, again, with a lot of things that we're supposed to do, the way we're supposed to carry ourselves as Christians, that it applies also. If we do everything out of love, then we're not gonna act this way. I think that even if we use the example earlier of a guy that won't listen to the truth, even though he won't listen to the truth, we still have a duty to love him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we can apply that to this.
Yes, that's exactly so. And that's what James points to is, you know, why? To love your neighbor. We do that. We stay true to that. We'll be all right. And, that's one of the points we were about to cover. I asked you to look at James, and he goes on to point out provide a summation for the reasons James uses to discourage this behavior, this attitude of partiality. In verses 5 and 7 of chapter 2, what does he call on him? What reasoning does he use in 5 and 7?
Well, they're equal heirs of faith.
Yes. He says, listen, my beloved brethren, has God not chosen the poor of this world to be rich in faith and heirs of the kingdom, which he promised to those who love him? But you have dishonored the poor man. Do not the rich oppress you and drag you into the courts? Do they not blaspheme that noble name by which you are called? Yeah, you're absolutely correct. In verse 5, as I said, God, who judges, knows men's hearts, he's chosen the poor. He's just sort of pointing out, it's not that he hasn't chosen the rich, has he? I mean, the rich can still be saved, right? But he's chosen both, of course, we know, based on merit, on faith and belief. And what else does he show lining up with that in verse, specifically in verse 6 and 7? How are the rich that he hasn't chosen, how are they behaving?
Well, he stated that the rich were the ones, he says, do they not blaspheme that noble's name by which you are called? So he was talking about the rich who crucified Jesus, I think.
Well, I think it's more general than just that. Just, yeah, there's plenty of rich people now who, they have riches, they feel safe, I guess, and they don't need God. They can blaspheme God, they don't respect God. You know, and of course this is a generalization. Abraham was rich and believed God, but he's generalizing here. God can choose both. But look at the rich. A lot of the rich, they blaspheme the name of our Lord. And, you know, it also says they drag you into the courts. They oppress you. Is this godly behavior? No. And so why is it when they see someone rich, oh, here you go, take my seat. You know, generally, these people aren't godly people. They're not doing right. So, you know, like I said before, it's based on merit.
What I was going to say was, there are, you see it on the news a lot, also with people that tend to have a vast amount of wealth, feel that they're entitled. They have a sense of entitlement. Because I have this wealth, I can do what I want, and I'm allowed, just because I can, because I have the money, because I did this.
I think sometimes, you know, like when it comes to movie stars and famous sports people, I thought about it, and I was like, what is that, how did that come about? And, you know, I think it's partially because they do get this type of treatment, that people give them special treatment, and then they're corrupted by it to where I expect it now. I expect to be treated this way.
And I'm above the law.
I'm above. I've gotten away with it all the time, so now why should anything change? This is the way it should be. They've corrupted their reasoning, their thinking.
But that goes from one end of the spectrum to the other. I mean, there's poor people out there that believe they're entitled.
Mm-hmm.
That
yes.
They're, you know, that they're, it goes, you know,
yeah,
the full scan of the spectrum.
Yeah, it goes both ways. But, you know, this is all coming back to what is merited, treatment that is merited versus unmerited. And of course, our attitude of how we're supposed to treat everyone.
And it should be based on loving God. You know, that's verse 5 says, you know, rich in faith and you love him. You know, that's what we should be making our righteous judgments about. and not on secular things that don't matter. Some secular things do matter, you know, when they cross the line of righteous or unrighteous. But, you know, what's he talking about here in the passage?
Yeah. And I asked, look at 8 and 11, what reasonings did he give there? I'm going to make you repeat what you just said.
Commit sin.
Yes, it's commit sin. And
love for your neighbor.
Yeah, and the love for our neighbor. So we're to love our neighbor. And you know, as Linda said, that's what one of the reasons that why we should have equal treatment and how we should treat all well. I mean, just because he's going on of railing against the rich here doesn't give us justification to go, oh, the rich are horrible, so we can treat them badly, and as long as we treat the poor all right, we're okay. Because it doesn't say anything about this in this passage is about treating the rich well. You know, he's saying he's trying to get them aligned and balanced. Treat all men well. It's not rich versus poor, but all men. And based on love. Also in verse 12, what reason does he give there? I read it. It says, so speak and so do as those who will be judged by the law of liberty.
You will be judged.
Yeah, we're going to be judged. And judged by the law of liberty. I'd like to look at Romans 2:16 for comparison.
Romans what?
Romans 2:16. Actually, I was going to start a little before that. Verse 11. As we read before, for there is no partiality with God. For as many as have sinned without the law will also perish without law. And as many as have sinned in the law will be judged by the law. For not the hearers of the law are just in the sight of God, but the doers of the law will be justified. But when Gentiles who do not have the law by nature do the things in the law, these, although not having the law, are a law to themselves, who show the work of the law written in their hearts, their conscience also bearing witness and between themselves, their thoughts accusing or else excusing them. That in the day when God will judge the secrets of men by Jesus Christ, according to my gospel. And so, I think, what can you see from the law? How is the judgment made?
Made judgments when they show partiality, not showing mercy. And God will judge them in the same way. With no mercy. Must get given no mercy.
So that was the next one.
Yes.
That was verse 13.
I think so. You're right.
I was looking for the Gentiles were. It was showing they were based on their attitude and their heart. Their conscience was guiding them, and they'd be judged by their conscience, by their desire. You know, they didn't have the law. Anyway, we're stopped. So we gotta go. Thank you, everybody, for good comments.